Welcome and thank you for joining us for some brand spanking new content. Nothing like last week where the headline was Man City and Liverpool are both good. This week, Liverpool are just slightly better as Zach Steffen learned how hard it is to fill Edison's boots as Liverpool beat Man City to line up another domestic final with Chelsea, who took the if we can't have him, nobody can approach with Conor Gallagher and comfortably dispatch Crystal Palace. Elsewhere, turns out the best side in North London is Brighton, who... After they beat Arsenal last week, went on to beat Spurs 1-0 this week, while Arsenal failed to capitalise and lose to Southampton. So, was it more Spursy or more typically Arsenal? And this all means that there's life in the old dog yet, as Manchester United re-enter the top four race, as long as they can play bottom of the league Norwich every single week. The Canaries are all but down, but who will join them? Well, I'm about to get this redhead's opinion on another redhead, as Sean Dyche loses his job at Burnley. Was that the right decision or was it all too late? As we know that somewhere in the country, Sammy Lee is answering his phone to, Sammy, it's Big Sam. We're getting the band back together. Are Burnley going to join them in the relegation zone? Let's all find out. Welcome to the Football Diary Podcast. Well, you'll always be my favourite redhead. Never mind Sean Dyche. How are you, Dave? Thank you for joining me.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Have a good Easter weekend.
Yeah, it wasn't too bad, to be fair. Back on my feet, thankfully, after a silly football injury myself. So glad to be there and glad to be watching the glorious FA Cup that probably wasn't that glorious for me as a Villa fan or you as a United fan, but let's unpick it anyway. So obviously the first of our games that we're going to discuss, Liverpool playing Man City again. And this time, turns out Liverpool had the beating of them. 3-2 the final score after a pretty... deafening first half for Man City. Liverpool were absolutely fantastic, weren't they, Dave? And that sort of saw them through the whole game. What did you think of the game?
Yeah, it was. They started quick out of the blocks first half, and Jurgen Klopp was mentioning that it was one of the best halves that they've played all season. And, I mean, you could say that. Especially, I think especially the third goal was so good. Kind of the interplay around the box and the finish from Mane. I don't think you're going to see a better finish all season, to be honest.
Brilliant, wasn't it?
The technique of the strike and, you know, right inside the entire post and brilliant, really. And it's coming to sort of the end of the season. Mane is actually starting to take some of the plaudits over from Mo Salah, who's sort of... kind of gone hiding a little bit of late, but I mean they've got players who stand up and they're ready to be counted. And another player I'd like to just highlight is Ibrahima Konate. I think he's been really, really good the last few games that he's and obviously scored two or three really important goals along the way. So
yeah, definitely
looking good for Liverpool. I mean, Man City's response second half, it was a little bit too little, too late.
Yeah.
And I mean, they did have a couple of chances. The goalkeeper had a couple of saves to make in that second half.
Yeah.
One of them, I think, was a 1v1. Jesus, who, if he'd scored that, it could have been a little bit more interesting, but felt like City just got that second goal too late and the writing was kind of on the wall, really.
It's funny because it's so hard to criticise Man City this season. They're obviously top of the league. They've been playing fantastic football. And the age-old point really comes back to, should Man City have signed a striker in the summer? Now, we only ever ask that question on the podcast when it looks like they could have done with it. And we don't talk about it the majority of the time when they're winning. But last week against Liverpool, I talked to you, didn't I, about how I didn't think Jesus was really the quality that they needed. And I thought, again, in this game, it was just too easy. Alisson's save in that one-on-one was good, but really a better striker finishes that chance. And again, there was a moment where he broke away from Van Dijk, and Van Dijk just caught up with him and just shoved him off the ball so easily. And it just looked like if they do go and get Haaland in the summer, he fills that gap perfectly, doesn't he? I think... you're right when you mention about Mane, though, and I think he does deserve a bit of the spotlight, particularly in this game, because this was Sadio Mane at his best, and we've not seen that all season necessarily. But it's a good problem to have for Liverpool that if one player is not firing, the other one is. Why do you think it's clicking for Mane now, Dave? Because it clearly has, something has clearly changed.
I think Obviously, one of the turning points is probably the African Cup of Nations. He seemed to have found a little bit of form with his national team, and it's potentially, probably not almost instantaneously, he's coming back to Liverpool. He's probably not found the form straight away, but I think it's given him a little bit of momentum to kind of build something upon. And I think they obviously bring in Luis Diaz into the team. I think it's probably not placed quite as much responsibility on his shoulders. Probably it's lifted a little bit of pressure. And the difference between Liverpool and Man City is Liverpool up front seem to be, you know, better positioned, and in terms of strength, I feel as though they are better and more potent in those front forward positions. And it's something that I feel Man City kind of needed a bit of a refreshing in terms of, and it's something they tried to, you know, fix, it seemed, in the summer, with apparently they were after Ronaldo as a short-term fix, which you can imagine if he was in their attack with the players and the hard-working players they've got around him, like you could easily he would have got probably 30 goals this season.
I think, though, beyond even the summer, they needed a refresh just in this game. It took Pep quite a long time to do anything, really. Because if you think about it, that goal that Grealish gets is so early in the second half. Mm. It does get them back into the game. But did they do enough to kind of go at Liverpool? It took them a while to get Mahrez on. I know there was talk that De Bruyne wasn't fit, but he stayed on the bench for a long time of the game when really he could have done with that creative influence. I don't really know whether I think maybe Pep just didn't really have the number for this one. I don't know what it was. Klopp seemed to just walk this one with Liverpool.
I think maybe he made too many changes. I think he made, obviously, he put Fernandinho in there, who's not played too much football of late. And there was a couple of words about him in press and saying he's decided that he's going to, you know, leave City at the end of the season, not sign any different. Guardiola obviously mentioned that he didn't know anything about that, and all of a sudden he's in the team. And I don't know if you can kind of drop somebody in a team like that who's not really playing much football of late and just kind of expect him to be kind of, you know, 110% committed to the cause in that kind of game. It's asking a lot, in my opinion. But like you say, it did kind of feel as though there were too many changes made, and maybe not quite enough respect paid to Liverpool, even though you look at the names on that team sheet and you think, you know, Man City can name two 11s, really, can't they? But
there is quite a big drop off when you're playing an opponent like Liverpool. They could name two 11s for most sides in the Premier League, but the quality of someone like Zach Steffen as a replacement for Edison is low. I don't think Jesus is of the quality that Man City necessarily need. Fernandinho is aging a lot. Nathan Ake obviously has had limited opportunities at Man City until recently. So I do wonder whether maybe the depth that City have got isn't quite the same as we kind of anticipate. I mean, you mentioned earlier how brilliant the third Liverpool goal was, and it was absolutely fantastic football. The link up on the edge of the box between Trent and Thiago through to Mane, and an amazing finish. What a goal. But the other Mane goal, we need to take a moment to just reflect on. If you're Guardiola, what do you say there? Like,
I mean, obviously he's come out and defended his player, which you kind of expect, but I don't really know how you can explain the goal itself. Like, the more and more, you know, times that you watch it and watch the replay, and you just think, surely in his head, he's got to kind of calculate what's actually happening. And what kind of baffles me is that he actually takes an extra touch when Mane's literally not even 2 yards away from him.
I couldn't understand that.
Like the way he takes the touch is he plays it so casually. You just think, what actually is he doing?
He had so much time to clear that ball. When he realised, oh, hang on a minute, I don't have an option here. He seemed to think, all right then, if I don't have a passing option, I'll just let Mane come in and see what happens. It was bizarre.
The thing is he had that pass on to the left back position for so long. There wasn't a Liverpool player really within, you know, sight of that pass, and that option was there. I just don't understand why it was so casual. And we've seen, you know, we've seen these ridiculous goals before, not on that level, but, you know, goalkeepers clearing the ball and it ricocheting and going into the goal, or going back into the box and another player tapping it in. But I mean, not on this scale. It was just, you can't explain it.
It was bizarre. Despite them getting two goals in the first half and in the second half, sorry, and actually they did have a couple of chances even after the second goal to maybe take it to extra time. It just wasn't enough, and Liverpool probably deserved they deserved the win in this one, didn't they? So that gets them a place in the final. Now, if you remember, just a few months ago, we saw Liverpool take on Chelsea in the League Cup final. Well, we're going to see the same thing again in the FA Cup final. Chelsea beat Crystal Palace 2-0. Goal from Ruben Loftus-Cheek against his former loan side, which I don't know how much credit you take to that. He certainly celebrated the goal anyway. It was enough to get them started. And then a second goal from Mason Mount as well, finished Crystal Palace off, who, again, they had their chances, particularly Joachim Andersen. He'll be kicking himself still, really, at the fact that they couldn't capitalise on that. So were Chelsea worthy winners in this one, Dave, do you think? Because it didn't really look like Crystal Palace were able to execute the same sort of game plan that they normally do, really.
No, they lacked energy in a few areas, and they just didn't have enough in the attacking areas or able to hold the ball up in certain areas to allow their other offensive players to get up the pitch and kind of give them support. And I was quite disappointed with them, really. And I kind of expected a lot more. I expected quite a competitive game. I thought it wouldn't surprise me if Palace could pull something out of the bag, because of late they've actually been in really good form. But the players, obviously, that normally make an impact for them just didn't really make an impact at all in terms of, obviously, you saw Zaha, who really kind of wasn't in the game at all. And like you mentioned earlier, obviously, Conor Gallagher.
What do you make of that? Obviously, that's been a long-standing rule within football, or that clubs negotiate into these loan contracts that they can't play against their parent club. What do you think of that? Do you think it was a shame to not see Gallagher in this game, or do you understand it?
Yeah, I think it differs, doesn't it, in different countries as well, though. I think they can be allowed to. I think there was one a few seasons ago where Real Madrid played. I can't remember one of their players was, and I think they were playing in the Champions League in a knockout. I can't remember what player it was, but it was a big high-profile player, and was quite a bit made of it.
But
I can kind of see why it's in there, but. Again, in that sort of, you know, game, the semi-final, the FA Cup, it is obviously disappointing, especially for Crystal Palace, how important for their season as well. He's arguably been their player of the season.
Definitely. I'll put you out your misery. You're thinking of James Rodriguez when he was at Bayern.
Yes, that's it.
And to be fair, that worked twice for Bayern, because Coutinho scored against Barcelona as well.
I mean, it works both ways, doesn't it?
I think it's the individual more than anything, though, because an FA Cup semi-final is a big thing for a player that early in his career. And he's definitely helped Crystal Palace get there. So he'll have been gutted that he couldn't play. But, I mean, if you're Chelsea, you don't really want to be hurt by your own player. And he has the capacity to do that. But another player that snuck into the headlines then from midfield was Ruben Loftus-Cheek. And it was nice to see him scoring again, wasn't it, Dave? Because this is a player that really had so much potential and so much promise. And we've not really seen that at the top of its game, really. Obviously, he's been affected by injuries and he's had a couple of loan spells out. But let's not forget, he was in the conversation for an England place and even went to the last World Cup. So what do you think? Is Ruben Loftus-Cheek sort of hitting the kind of form that we would expect of him at the moment?
I think what Tuchel probably does like about him is the physicality that he offers in obviously central midfield. And he's able to kind of drive with the ball and getting up and down the pitch. And I think he did show that in the Champions League, and which when they played Real Madrid in the second leg, I think he had a big impact on really just kind of controlling that midfield. But we saw it obviously in moments in this game. Obviously, he came on as a sub early on in the first half, and with his goal, it was such a clean strike. Obviously, there was that deflection that sort of took it away from the goalkeeper, and obviously, we can't really know whether we or not it would have gone in. But full credit to him. And, you know, the player that we look back and you think, oh, he's playing for Fulham on loan, relegated Fulham, obviously, a season or so ago. And it really didn't look like he had another opportunity to, you know, another go at it with Chelsea. And you've got to give a lot of credit to him and the manager. The manager obviously believes in him for giving him these opportunities. And he's been so kind of plagued by injuries and maybe not being a little bit unlucky in getting opportunities in the right moments. But, I mean, you've got to remember, it goes back as far as Mourinho at Chelsea, how long he's been.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it?
Mourinho kind of gave him a lot of, name-dropped him a lot and said, this is, you know, a player, if he keeps his feet on the ground, should be playing for Chelsea every week. So there's obviously something there that Tuchel's seen and he's given him plenty of opportunities and he's just kind of, you know, making his mark now. So hopefully if he can, I don't know, like I said, I don't know if he can be obviously one of the first names on the team sheet consistently. We'll see what he do in the transfer window this summer. But
if they can do anything, you have to remember that we still don't know what's happening with the club. So actually that could benefit a couple of players. You think of, we talk about Conor Gallagher, he'll be back at Chelsea next year and you'd imagine they'll keep him in the squad. We'll also see Ruben Loftus-Cheek get more opportunities. I think it could be a good time for them, really. A bit like when Lampard took over at Chelsea and they had the embargo. Some young players obviously got their opportunity then, and look at like Reece James. He took that opportunity and now he is one of the first names on the team sheet, definitely. Along with him, one of the first names on the team sheet might be Timo Werner at the moment as well. He looked fantastic in this game, I thought. Looked very good against Real Madrid as well. Caused them some problems. And previously against Southampton too. So Timo Werner's starting to hit some form as well, Dave, which could be a really exciting prospect for Chelsea.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we've seen his flaws, for all his flaws, he just offers something that Lukaku doesn't, in abundance of energy, and those runs that he makes off the ball are terrific. And if he can, it's something for him to build upon going into the end of the season. If he can obviously go score a few goals and go into the new season, you could see him as one of the first names on the team sheet. And just let's not forget, he's still a young player and somebody who, you know, it's going to improve the more he plays, and let's just hope that, you know, it's Chelsea that gives him that opportunity. And because it looks like he might have been on the way out, and there was a lot of rumours with Man United being interested in it.
Really? To be honest, I just really foresaw Haaland going to City, Timo Werner going over to Dortmund. I saw that written in the stars, to be honest. Mm-hmm. But maybe Chelsea would be keen to keep him, especially as Lukaku's form's not looked too impressive of late, and he missed a big chance in this game again where he hit the post. But well, you mentioned briefly there, obviously we record on a Monday, so we're always a bit late for the Champions League, but worth noting that the three teams we've talked about so far all featured in the Champions League. Manchester City managed to overcome a Royal Rumble with Atletico Madrid and get their place in the semi-final sorted. Liverpool, even though Benfica scored more offside goals than I've ever seen in a single match, and Darwin Nunes looked fantastic. Liverpool came through the Benfica test as well, so they're into the semi-finals. Chelsea were so close, weren't they, Dave? Honestly, heartbreaking for them. They obviously had a 3-1 defeat in the first leg and actually managed to get themselves back into this game. They were 3-0 up in the second leg. Then Luka Modric just oozed class with a wonderful assist for Rodrigo to take it to extra time. And then who else but Karim Benzema won it for them. So it would have been hard for Chelsea to pick themselves back up for this game, Dave, but cementing themselves in another cup final under Thomas Tuchel, which is extraordinary when you look at it, really. What do you think that means for their season now? Have they got to win this cup for this season to be deemed any sort of success?
Yeah, I think you'd have to say that. Just because, obviously, the standards that they've set over, you know, the last 10, 15 years, really, they've obviously won a lot of trophies. And it's, you can't imagine they'd be happy going a whole season not winning any silverware. And they've got a big opportunity to do that in the final against Liverpool and get a bit of revenge, which a couple of the players have already mentioned. I'm sure they'll be eager to do so. And if there's any team to do it, I feel like it could be Chelsea. And the way that they play, like you mentioned, it's, they've played so impressively over the last couple of games. You know, against Real Madrid, that second game, they had so many chances. They really should have been out of sight of Real Madrid. And it just took a little bit of class from Modric to kind of reboot Real Madrid and give them a bit of momentum and, you know, have a couple of decisive moments in the game. And obviously it got them through just by the skin of the teeth. So, but full credit to Chelsea. And it's something we've mentioned about Tuchel, is that he's able to get a reaction out of that team. And it was something he was quick to highlight up on when after the Real Madrid game, that his team, he was so proud of his team and how they played, and he couldn't have asked any more of them. So full credit to them. We'll see if they have a strong end to the season, but we've seen the reaction that they have in terms of when they have a little bit of a, you know, shoddy result, they are able to turn it around.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've got two English teams in the Champions League semi-finals. We've also got an English team in the Europa League semi-final, as West Ham were absolutely fantastic against Lyon and secured their place. A wonderful, wonderful run in the cup it's been for them. Rangers are also in the semi-final after a very dramatic game against Braga, but fantastic win for them. And Leicester are also in the semi-final of the Conference League. Looks like Leicester's season finally has started, and they turned up and beat PSV with a very late goal to set up a tie with Jose Mourinho's Roma, who got through with a Zaniolo hat-trick. So it's quite exciting seeing teams focus on Europe for this season. But about next season's European places, does anyone want it? Is the genuine question. After Spurs put together such a great run of form, they lose 1-0 to Brighton. And you think, right, well, Arsenal, it's your turn to capitalise on your rival, slip it up. And they couldn't. They lose to Southampton, who, let's remember, lost 6-0 last week. So now all of a sudden, Man United are back in the picture. They beat Norwich 3-2. Very poor defensive display by Man United. I'm not sure that they necessarily deserve the win, but they have Cristiano Ronaldo, and that's normally enough against sides like Norwich. So what do you make of the whole top four picture now, Dave, and those three games as a whole?
It's, you don't know where it's going to go next, do you? Or the way it's going. The only thing I can say is that I can't see United getting top four with only just having enough to beat Norwich, and, you know, a game which they weren't convincing at all. And Norwich had plenty of chances. De Gea, again, saved a couple of goals, and they just about did enough. But obviously, largely, like you mentioned, to Ronaldo. And if United do make top four, he's going to have a lot to do with them getting there. And he would probably have to drag them there. And, you know, with how we've seen him, especially in moments in the Champions League and getting his team over the line, if there is anyone that's going to do it, it's going to be him. But I give them a very small chance. And from what I've seen, even of how bad Tottenham were against Brighton, which I was very surprised by, because Spurs of late, you know, really turned on. But as we've seen again, they've been capable of performing poorly in certain games, and it just seemed like they lacked all sort of energy, and I just couldn't understand why. They just lacked any sort of spark. And I think one thing about Brighton as a team is big teams don't like playing against them, because they are more than fully capable of you know, playing some good football and dominating possession. They're one of the top teams, I'd say, in the bottom half, mid-table teams that are so good in the ball, underrated, feel like, on the ball. And they've obviously got a good midfield. They've got some good players in there in Trossard. Bissouma, who had an excellent game again.
Yeah.
So, full credit to Brighton for, and the goal was a really good goal, although quite poorly defended by I suppose.
Yeah.
Moment, a little bit naive from them. You think, okay, well, it's not been our day. Defend well, take the point, and we'll move on to the next one. But they just conceded another poor goal on their behalf.
And then the other game was a tale of a great goalkeeping performance, I think. Although, to be fair, I think Arsenal had 23 shots on goal against Southampton. Only 6 of them were on target. So it was a great goalkeeping performance, but a wasteful performance up front for Arsenal. And they got punished.
Yeah, I think you've got to give a lot of credit to 2 goalkeeping performances this season, this weekend in Porter and Nick Pope, Burnley. I thought they were both in goal. Like you mentioned there, there was probably a couple of saves that Forster made that you probably expected to make. But there were a couple, one going in his bottom left corner that he just literally were able to turn around the post, and the one where he had to make a reaction save to Sacco, you thought, surely he's got a score, and he made a reaction save and literally just turned it over. And yeah, he looked like the keeper of old who we're seeing, Fraser Forster. He sort of went off the radar a little bit for a while, but
yeah,
we've seen some of his performances for Celtic in the past, and you know, he made some heroic performances, and he's definitely I'm sure he's looking to build on that. And Arsenal, again, you could probably, they might look at it and think on another day we could have scored 2 or 3 goals with the opportunity we're able to create and the amount of shots that they had. I'd be less concerned as Mikel Arteta than on what I would as Antonio Conte.
Which
is really poor.
Well, the difficulty though for Arsenal is that's now 3 losses on the bounce, and they've got Chelsea next as well. So they've not necessarily got a very good record against the bigger teams. That could really be a problem for them. And when you look at the run-in that each side has got, I think obviously United have still got to play Arsenal, haven't they? And they also, I think, have Liverpool and Chelsea. Arsenal have United, Spurs and Chelsea to play. Spurs really is still in their hands. So if they can avoid this performance again, it probably will be theirs. But you're saying that despite the fact that United gained 3 points on the other 2 sides, you think it's Spurs still, or what do you think?
I think Tottenham, I felt for sure before Saturday's performance, Spurs, but I mean, that's kind of put a little bit of doubt in my mind just how poor they were against Brighton. I don't really know, you know, what the explanation was behind it, really, because they looked clueless, you know, especially his front areas. They just didn't create a great deal at all. And, you know, when you've not got that front three firing, who have you got? Because, you know, they've got Lucas Moura, you know, Bergwijn, who has been a little bit hit and miss, all of them. And that's probably what I would say is their bench isn't the strongest to, you know, to kind of when the it's, you know, it's tough going, they're not really able to turn it around, and we saw that in this game. So I'll probably say, if I was still to say, I'd say Spurs, but not with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, I understand that. But it looks like we're expecting on Wednesday, potentially, as soon as, that Erik ten Hag will be announced as Man United's new manager. It looks all but confirmed today, but the club are yet to make an announcement. That will probably follow in the week. So maybe that will at least give Man United a bit of momentum in terms of trying to impress a new manager. They know who that manager is going to be now. Can they try and get him some European football? It's going to be an interesting end to the season for sure. But there's 2 ends of the table we have to think about. And one man that's going to be watching very patiently and isolated will be Sean Dyche, who's sat at home now, unfortunately not on the touchline for Burnley. So after nearly 10 years at the club, and I think you can say he's achieved quite a bit with them, keeping them in the Premier League for as long as he has on quite a small budget. I think he got them a 7th place finish 1 year, didn't he? And into European football, which was just mental. But it did look like it had gone a little bit stale. It's an odd time maybe to make that decision. What do you think? What do you make of the whole situation at Burnley now, Dave?
I think it's a bit bizarre, the timing of, you know, the decision, in that there's so many, obviously there's little games left to really turn it around for any manager that comes in, whether they're actually going to recruit a new manager, full-time manager in that time, or obviously give part-time duties to, you know, a caretaker boss. And is it Ben Mee who's...
Ben Mee and Michael Jackson. Not that one.
yeah, I've seen quite a few jokes on social media about that. But yeah, it seemed utterly bizarre, really, and the way it's been dealt with. Obviously, off the back of a good win against Everton the game before against Norwich, you can kind of understand that was a really poor result for Burnley. That was, you know, the easiest game they probably would have had all season, and Norwich actually played really well. And you would have expected them to look at that, and it was really a must-win for me.
Yeah.
So that seemed to be the result that obviously the board decided to make the decision on the back of. And but like you mentioned, there's this little time to make an impact.
Yeah.
It seems like the players were still playing for their manager.
Yeah.
No animosity between the players or any sort of...
Not between the players, but Dyche had a couple of digs at the board, hadn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Over his time. So I do wonder whether... They've got new owners since Dyche has been there. And I do wonder whether they were kind of waiting for an opportunity to bring in their own man anyway. And that loss to Norwich was just enough to tip it over the scales. It's funny because you never think that a manager should be sacked based on one result. And of course, we've got a whole season of Burnley not really doing well enough. But if Everton, if Burnley beat Norwich last week, Sean Dyche is still in the job, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
It's odd timing for me. And the fact that they've not appointed someone already for the rest of the season, that to me screams a lack of a plan, because you don't tend to make a managerial change at this sort of stage in the season unless you've got someone lined up. Look at Leeds. When they took Bielsa out, it wasn't long. They knew they wanted Jesse Marsh. He was already their man. Same with Watford. They had Hodgson like that ready. Burnley don't. So why remove someone who has been there before with Burnley, is going to know that squad better than anyone else will, because it is completely his squad. He's the one that's developed that. It's not like a Man United or a Chelsea where four or five managers have brought in players and you've got to develop them. That's Sean Dyche's squad. So I don't think Sean Dyche is the best manager, to be honest. And I think his football is stale. I think it's not exciting for Burnley fans at all. I could understand why in the summer they might make a change and refresh things. But now that could be signing your own death warrant, really, couldn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, it might come back to bite them. Who knows? He could have kept them up. They could have gone down anyway. But yeah, like you mentioned, it is just, yeah, I can't really explain what the thinking is behind it. Whether, like you say, there's been some sort of disagreements between obviously the manager and the board. There has been a couple in the past, like you mentioned, reportedly. So, yeah, I mean, the game itself, they actually played really well, Burnley. And what we've mentioned, the Premier League is kind of, you know, it comes back to bite you, and it's literally fine margins this game again, on the back of that penalty, which would have given them a 2-0 lead, Maxwell Cornet.
Yeah.
And the way as well, annoying, is he's brought that ball down so well. That first touch was ridiculous. Yeah. That into his path. Done well to win the penalty, and then, you know, one of the worst penalties you probably see this season.
I really feel for Cornet, because obviously he had that miss last week as well against Norwich, and he got a lot of criticism for that. And then in this game, he's missed that penalty. But if we're honest, Burnley had already been relegated without him. He's scored 7 goals in the season, their top scorer. So you can't argue with what he's contributed to that side. He's clearly the best player that Burnley have. He's got such talent, Maxwell Cornet. I can't believe he's at Burnley, to be honest. So it was unfortunate for him. I wonder if he was a bit unsettled, because how many times have we seen this where two players argue over who's going to take the penalty, who the person who does step up eventually misses? It's just obvious, isn't it? Jay Rodriguez really wanted that penalty, and Maxwell Cornet said no. It just looked so disorganized, didn't it? Kind of a summary of Burnley's season, isn't it, in a microcosm?
And thing is, as well, that makes it, you know, even more a comedy is if Sean Dyche was there for that game, would Cole Corney have been taking that penalty?
Well, who knows? Burnley haven't had a penalty in so long that it's hard to assess. I think I heard earlier, though, that Jay Rodriguez has scored 19 in 21 from the spot. So you've got to think he would be favourite to take it, really. It was odd. I mean, they've got a few players on the pitch that I would have met. Weghorst might have taken it. You know what I mean? It's just one of those things, isn't it? And you mentioned earlier how good Nick Pope's performance was. Although Burnley did play well, they could have easily lost this game if it wasn't for him in goal, right?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, he made a couple of brilliant saves. Particularly, I think it was the first one where it was going top corner and literally turned it away. It was Jared Bowen. And you thought, it came through a sea of bodies as well. For him to be able to kind of react to that in the short time that he did, I thought was ridiculous. And we've seen him pull these performances out, and it's where it's got him this recognition, obviously, with England, and obviously England have given him an opportunity, and he's fully deserved it, really. And he's going to have to be on top form for the rest of the season for them to be in with a chance of staying up. And at the minute, you'd say that momentum isn't with them, because
no.
I think that was an opportunity missed, as well as you know, the many chances that West Ham had. We've seen that when you're at the bottom of the table, you do need a little bit of luck to go your way. And
yeah, that penalty wasn't it, was it? And I mean, you can understand West Ham not really turning up to their full capacity in this game after their midweek efforts. And again, worth noting how fantastic that was for them. But it does kind of look like the bottom three now might be the bottom three come the end. Because although it is a point for Burnley, which gets them slightly closer to Everton, one point's not really enough right now. They need to be getting all three, particularly if they're in a winning position and had that chance to go 2-0 up. It's a real shame. But the other team in the bottom three, we've mentioned Norwich already, and who actually didn't look that bad against Man United, but they look down. Burnley are obviously struggling and without a manager now. And then Watford. Brentford are fantastic at the moment. They're on a great run of form. It's worth noting that. And great for them to pick up another win. They're looking to finish in the top half now. But Watford, again, another side down the bottom who will be kicking themselves, because they probably could have won this game, couldn't they? They lost 2-1 to Brentford. And right at the end of the game, Dave, they have two pretty much open goals. And Josh King hits the post. It falls to the most unfortunately named footballer in the Premier League this year. I'm not sure this is how you even say it, but the commentator just shouted, "Loser, loser, loser," as he missed the target, which was unfortunate. And then Brentford go up the other end and score a late winner, and Norwich look like they're pretty much done now as well, don't they, Dave?
It's been the downfall of Norwich there. Defensively, they've been terrible for much of the season. It's shown in, you know, for all of Brentford's brilliant goals that they've scored of late, particularly the ones against Chelsea, these two that they scored obviously weren't pretty at all. And although one came from a long throw-in, the other one came a free kick. So, but I mean, obviously they'll take it. They went arguing that, you know, Brentford march on and Watford's woes continue.
Yeah, and it's a shame really for Roy Hodgson. Well, I question why he took that job in the first place. That club's a basket case. I want them to go down because I think their model's just ridiculous. But a manager like Hodgson, I thought, might have given him a chance, but he's just not really got anything clicking. I think they've now lost 10 home games in a row. That's a lot to process. That's not they've drawn a couple of games, they've not won in 10 games. They've lost 10 games in a row. Imagine being a season ticket holder and what you've got from Watford this season. They're better off in the Championship, aren't they?
Yeah, and like you mentioned there, their scattergun approach with managers as well has been a little bit all over the place, and they're not really back managers. And obviously, like you mentioned there, Roy Hodgson comes in and he kind of sense that he's fighting a losing battle and getting them, you know, to safety. And There's been some topsy-turvy performances. They've been comprehensively beat quite a few times this season. And again, you mentioned there, I think one standout for him this season, Emmanuel Dennis. I think he's been brilliant in certain games. You can see that he can definitely, I feel as though he can definitely play for a better team. Definitely a top-half team, you would say. He obviously scored a really good goal in this game.
Yeah, it was a lovely finish.
Yeah, you just, that's the thing though. It seems the team's so disjointed. There's no kind of, doesn't look like there's a real plan in games at times.
Yeah.
You can't really kind of pinpoint what they do well as well. I don't really know what they do well as a team.
Nothing.
Can't defend very well. You know, it's just a real difficult one. And for, like you mentioned, it's a little bit, you feel a little bit sorry for Hodgson, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, it looks like they'll be in the Championship next season. One team that won't be in the Championship next season, as of today, are Derby County. Reading, with a last-minute equaliser, 94th-minute goal, was enough to put them 10 points clear of Derby with three games to go. So they are down now. Looks like they'll probably be joined by Peterborough, although, obviously, Reading's still not quite safe. Birmingham are just about safe. They lost 6-1 to Blackpool. Blues don't get mentioned very often on this podcast, obviously, because I'm around, but worth making time for them when they've lost 6-1. But a shame for Wayne Rooney and Derby after everything they've gone through this season to finally have that nail in the coffin. Do you think Wayne Rooney will stay there for next season, Dave?
There's so much uncertainty around the club at the minute, isn't there? I think they're just hoping that, you know, there will be a buyout and they can kind of look forward and there won't be any sort of uncertainty surrounding the club, because obviously fans don't even know where they're at the minute. And it's been unfortunate because Rooney's done such a good job there.
Yeah.
Without that point deduction, I think they would have been on something like 61 points, which would have been around mid-table,
yeah.
I think just below QPR. So it must be so heartbreaking, really, for the fans and everyone to do with Derby County, what they're going through at the moment. And obviously, I think the players will be able to hold their heads up high, especially you think about, I think Rooney only had, when everything was going on around the wages and things like that, I think he had like something like 7 fit players, first team players available.
I think I've read somewhere that like there's only 4 players that will be in contract next season as well at this point, which is just absolutely mental, isn't it?
I mean, I know a couple of, they've been able to sell a few of their youth players as well. And I think it's Eber Saley who's going to Udinese next season.
Yeah.
One of their young, talented players. So, I mean, you've got to hope and really kind of pray for them, really, that the buyout gets over the line, because you do worry for them.
Yeah.
Sure, they're not really thinking so much about League One and they're just prioritising on the survival of the club. And you've got to think that it's got to give, really, for them to just get over the line and be stable as a club. And
yeah,
and fingers crossed that's the case.
Well, I don't think any of us predicted that we'd be thinking of Wayne Rooney managing Derby in League One while Paul Ince was managing Reading in the Championship in 2022. But that's where we're at. By the next time we meet, Dave, obviously there's midweek fixtures all week this week. Manchester United have got Liverpool tomorrow. That one's going to be exciting for you, I'm sure. And then Wednesday we see Everton, Leicester. Chelsea, Arsenal's a really big one. Newcastle, Palace, Man City, Brighton. And then Thursday, Southampton, Burnley. I'm sure Sam Allardyce will be in the dugout by then, probably, or someone of that ilk. Any hope for tomorrow, Dave?
No. But
good answer.
I mean, you just kind of set yourself up for the worst, I suppose, at the minute. And that way you don't feel as disappointed or angry after the result. But it's never nice. Obviously, it's never nice as a United fan to lose to Liverpool in the state we are in at the moment. A draw would be, you know, absolutely brilliant. But
we're playing like one
of the worst teams in the league. And yeah, it says a lot when Ralph Rangnick comes out and says, we're the only team that concedes goals like this. in Premier League.
Yeah, 100%. It does make me laugh that the ball's not even been kicked yet, and you will say it's never nice to lose to Liverpool. It's a foregone conclusion. And that's why I say that Ten Hag will be announced on Wednesday, because when Man United fans are just fuming at their club for getting battered 6-0 to Liverpool, that'll be their way of trying to appease the fans, isn't it? But we'll have all of that to talk about next week. Hopefully Mike will be back with us then as well. But thank you for being with me this week, Dave. And thank you to everyone that's watching for being with the Football Diary podcast. We mention it again that we've been going just over a year now, still relatively small, but any support is really, really appreciated by all of us. You can follow us on social medias at Football Diary UK. Give us a like and a subscribe on YouTube. And of course, we're on Spotify as well. So thank you for your time this week, Dave.
No, I've enjoyed it.
Always a pleasure, my friend.
Hopefully we have a good result to talk about next time.
I can't wait to talk about how many goals Liverpool have scored since we last met. But thank you for being with me, and thank you to everyone for watching.